they'll do shockwave while they're doing
Right, I
acupuncture.
do that too. Yeah, I'll do
Okay.
that too. Especially like in an arthritic dog that I want to treat the whole body, so the dog is stiff through the top line of the neck. I'll put some needles out in the neck and top line, and then I'll work on a stifle with the shockwave. The shockwave provides a nice focused treatment area and is very powerful, especially in problems that have been there for a long time. If you really want to break through those pain patterns and stimulate that body to start healing, then the shockwave is fantastic for that. And I actually ended up getting the shockwave unit because of how effective it is in treating tendinopathies, especially shoulders and elbows, which I've always struggled with getting those better using, my traditional methods of acupuncture and laser and body work. The shockwave has really been a game changer in those areas. So super, super happy with it.
Love
So
that.
yeah, a lot of tools.
That was Dr. Julie Soa, and I'm your host, Joe Lemon. Thank you so much, as always, to tuning into The Rehab Lab, powered by Elevation Medical and the PaizoWave 2. Quick clip you actually just heard. I was talking to Dr. Soa about how she was using acupuncture as well as the focused shockwave therapy in the PaizoWave. And, you know, this is something that I think a lot of clinicians are doing, and they're mixing multi-modalities. And Dr. Soa was a great conversation because she has a ton of them. I mean, everything from being skilled in chiropractic to acupuncture. She also has lasers, hot and cold, from my understanding. Shockwave, of course, with the PaizoWave, hydrotherapy, PEMF, and she's skilled in manual therapy as well and corrective exercise. So if you're looking for a really good conversation on how clinicians are dissecting when's the right time to bring in the right modality, this is going to be a good one. So with that being said, let's dive right into today's conversation with Dr. Soa. Hope you enjoy. All right. I'm super excited to have Dr. Julia Soa here on the podcast. We were just laughing about a little bit of her, about her past, not laughing at her past. We were laughing in, you know, as a group about some of her different journey that she went to kind of dive into this whole vet rehab world. And if you don't mind, I mean, I think it was a great statement that you said. You're like, look, saving one animal is a whole lot easier than like trying to save the planet. There's a lot going on in that space. I mean, I would love to kind of hear about how you kind of made that transition.
But yeah, as far as transition from an environmentalist to veterinarian, like I mentioned, I had worked as an environmental consultant for about 5 years. I really enjoyed it. My role was as a property site assessment evaluator. So I would go out to properties and identify areas where there were potential sources of contamination in the ground, where somebody had either dumped a bottle of or a container of petroleum, or maybe there was an underground storage tank that had been abandoned, and it was my job to find those, and then it would be passed over to the engineers to remediate it, or return the property to pristine condition before they would sell it. So I did that for about 5 years and really couldn't go much further in the industry without an advanced degree. I had an undergraduate degree, so that was when the decision to either continue with environmental consulting, get an advanced degree, or do something that I had always wanted to do, which was play with horses. So on a whim, I said, I'm gonna go play with horses. So I went to Colorado State University and got my second bachelor's in equine science. And it took me about 2 years to get that degree. All my credits had transferred from the University of Washington. And then it was like, well, now what should I do? And then I just, I applied to vet school. Like I said, I'd always wanted to be a vet, but I didn't necessarily follow that path until later in life.
Well, you know what?
And so
I
here I am, saving animals instead of planets.
mean, well, look, I would imagine that you're probably still doing both in like some capacity, but I mean,
I
obviously,
recycle.
there you go. That's a step in the right direction. I mean, but you know, thinking about your path getting into vet medicine, so I'll always ask this question because lots of our clients, you know, they're obviously looking at the whole industry and trying to take a different approach to it normally a little bit, right? So why not take on the, you know, general practice setup, lots of surgeries and high volume? Because I mean, it seems like you have a much different practice where you're doing acupuncture and shockwave and some other different.
Right, so I'm sorry. I've only had half a cup of coffee because my coffee maker wasn't working because the power's out. What was the question again? I apologize.
No worries. You know what? It's probably me because I'm on this mushroom coffee this morning and it's got me pretty like
Oh, I
pretty
need to try mushroom coffee. Maybe
man, I've been loving it. I've been loving it, honestly. But okay, so just kind of why didn't you stay in that traditional lane of like general medicine whenever it comes to general vet medicine? Because you've obviously made some heavy investments into doing some things that are a little bit more holistic, as I would say.
You know, I think in the broader picture is it's a lot more rewarding to me to be able to fix something with my hands as opposed to medicine or surgery. And that's not saying that every animal won't benefit from a surgery, or, you know, oftentimes I use a combination of drugs and manual therapy or holistic therapy, but I just like the ability to be able to tell the body how to heal itself, which is, it's very rewarding to me. And it just, it strikes a chord with me. You know, other veterinarians like the other route, but you know, it's nice that we have multiple approaches to be able to help animals. And I just decided to go down this path because one, it's fun to do and it's a lot less stressful.
100%.
Like I said, I did emergency medicine for 5 years and I enjoyed it, but you know, after a while and getting older, those 15-hour shifts overnight tend to wear you down.
I could imagine.
So then I just kind of eased over into the little bit slower pace and also, you know, being able to do my own practice, being able to set my own hours, and it's just a lot more rewarding. It's just, I feel like you work really hard to be able to get to this point in your career, you know, and it was important to be able to do all those different styles of vet medicine to be able to, you know, help the animals. Cause I see them come from all different angles and they all have multitudes of problems. And I've personally, as a veterinarian, have dealt with those as a general practitioner or as an emergency veterinarian, or even a spay neuter. I did spay neuter for many years as well too. So, you know, I know the angle that they're coming from. So I kind of have an insight on what's going to be best to help them.
Definitely makes tons of sense. And, you know, I think that's, it's really interesting because what you mentioned, I think is powerful because a lot of people are working to get into this space, right? Where they kind of have that freedom and they have this sense of doing meaningful work. Sometimes you kind of set yourself up to kind of take a totally different path where you're working really hard and you might not be feel like you're having the same impact that you would like to have. And on the human side, that's where I work a lot. I think that the vets impact the humans, then vice versa. You know, like, I mean, like, because right. I see so many vets that are way more innovative and they're diving deeper into having more research and they're just more collaborative as a whole, I feel like. Lots of the humans will kind of peek over there just to kind of see what's happening and then try to steal different ideas, see what's going on. And see how
it's you got to be pretty clever in motivating a dog to do 20 sit to stands in a row as opposed to telling a human, okay, now sit up or now sit, now stand, now sit. It's a different conversation. So, you know, we have to, a lot of times, especially in the animals that are hurting or not wanting to do things, just assisting them with the actual physical therapy and doing that in a quadruped versus a 180-pound biped. It's a little different approach, but same concept.
Probably the best part is that you don't get a lot of, you know, lots of mouthing back, which I could imagine is probably nice.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, I'm just thinking about all the things that you're doing, right? I mean, because you said acupuncture, chiropractic, I saw cold laser as well. Underwater therapy, PMF, manual therapy, and you're also using the actual PiezoWave, I believe. How do you kind of mix all this in? Because that's a nice tool shed, right? Of different
I've got a lot of tools in my shed. Well, I have a couple of wonderful assistants that I've trained to do a lot of the manual therapy and the physical therapy exercises, and they run my treadmill for me. So I have the oversight on the animal. They'll come in, I'll identify the issues and based on what I feel is going to work best for that particular animal, you know, I develop my plan from there. So, you know, and it's different based on the age of the animal. Like older animals, I feel need a little more of a gentle approach. So for example, if I get an arthritic dog, oftentimes I'll start with an approach using acupuncture and then gradually ease them into a physical therapy program, probably using my underwater treadmill. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, a young 2-year-old dog that's just had a surgery to repair his knees comes in, he doesn't have many, you know, restrictions going on through the body. Oftentimes I'll start them right away with a physical therapy program of treadmill and balance training and using balance equipment. And most of the time, like I say, my assistants can handle that part of it because they're trained in that. But I do the modalities, the acupuncture and the shockwave, and my assistants are trained on how to use the laser. So we all kind of work as a team. I've got three employees. One is a receptionist, and then the other two are trained in some of the modalities to help me out.
That's great. Like having an actual team approach where you guys can kind of mix in different tools at the right time. And I guess I'm really curious too, when you think about acupuncture, and I'm so new to understanding acupuncture and really understanding the actual science behind it, but is it more so based off of like, you know, something similar to how the shockwave is operating with that, you know?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Boy, I could spend a whole year talking about acupuncture.
Let's do it.
Right. Well, it's obviously it stimulates nerves, right? And it's working via the dorsal horn and the spinal cord, and it's inhibiting the pain pathways. So when you inhibit pain pathways, which I guess would be the primary mode of action of acupuncture, the animal is more comfortable to start moving better. And when you start moving better, the muscles become stronger. So it's a combination, but probably the biggest, method or mode of action of acupuncture is pain inhibition.
Gotcha.
And it's a very gentle form of treatment that, has been around for thousands of years. We work on peripheral nerves, and the peripheral nerves will send the signal to the central nervous system. And then you have the whole body effect, plus you're working on a local area. So it's complex, but yet simple at the same time. I don't want to butcher it, because if Narda Robinson is listening, she'll yell at me.
That makes sense for me. I mean,
but she's super high level. Very evidence-based. It's very science-based. She actually has started a school called CuraCorps. So that used to be the medical acupuncture for veterinarians course that I took way back when. But now she runs a whole school on acupuncture for veterinarians and humans. She's a DO as well. So she teaches acupuncture to on the human side as well.
It's been around. It's one of the oldest therapies from what I've seen. I mean, like, it's been around for thousands of years. And I've even seen some of my clients, and this is on the human side, they'll do shockwave while they're doing acupuncture.
Right. I do that too. Yeah. I'll do that too. Especially like in an arthritic dog that I want to treat the whole body. So the dog is stiff through the top line of the neck. I'll put some needles in the neck and top line, and then I'll work on a stifle with the shockwave. The shockwave provides a nice focused treatment area, and it's very powerful, especially in like long standing problems that have been there for a long time. If you really want to break through those pain patterns and stimulate that body to start healing, then the shockwave is fantastic for that. And I actually ended up getting the shockwave unit because of how effective it is in treating tendinopathies, especially shoulders and elbows, which I've always struggled with getting those better using, my traditional methods of acupuncture and laser and body work. The shockwave has really been a game changer in those areas. So super, super happy with it.
Love that.
So yeah, a lot of tools. It's almost like magical pot that I mix up and throw at the animal. But if one doesn't work, then we have multiple other options that we can try to help out an animal. So, most of the time I can, help out most of my patients. 85% to 90% of them will get some level of improvement.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, even with that too, it's great because I had the privilege of working with like a lot of pro teams, and when you go into their locker rooms, that's what they have. They have all those modalities that are listed there.
Right.
Even some of them still don't have the underwater like treadmills, which is kind of crazy.
Right. But they have the cryotherapy bath, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's 100%.
You really want to torture yourself. I don't think we do that in vet medicine yet, but that might be down the road.
Give us some time. Yeah.
Big ice bath, but yeah.
Ice baths, float tanks are big over there as well. But what's funny is that a lot of athletes still avoid them and avoid using all these tools. And, once I'm talking to the trainers, I'm like, how do you guys get your athletes to do it? Because sometimes guys just be like, I don't want to do shockwave. It hurts too much, or this or that. And the people fall in love with different tools. But, you know, I think it's really interesting how you kind of mix in multiple tools so you can get the biggest bang for your buck and the biggest bang for your actual therapy sessions. And acupuncture, pain blocking standpoint, makes tons of sense of why you would mix it in now. Because I've seen it done and I'm like, wow, I feel like we're doing similar activities. But that kind of clears that up for me once you kind of look at it through that lens. So I love that.
Right.
Thoughts on hot laser versus cold laser, like class four versus going versus the actual cold laser. What was your, do you have any opinions there?
Well, it's to my knowledge, cold laser in class. So a cold laser that I use is a class four, but it's at the lower setting. I believe it's anything over 1 watt of energy is considered a class four. And from my understanding, class four ranges anywhere from the therapeutic lasers all the way up to the surgical lasers. Used both. So I've used surgical lasers in practice. But obviously the wavelength is turned up incredibly high to cut tissue. But at the lower settings is where you get your therapeutic settings. So, you know, decreasing inflammation and increasing cellular metabolism so that the area heals quicker. I use it a lot. I really like it for, you know, one, it's a very gentle modality and the animals love it. It works really well in acute tissue strains. So I use it more for acute type injuries. So if an animal comes in as recently strained a tendon, the laser is the first thing that I reach for to reduce that inflammation and that pain. And I like to use it a lot in animals that have had a recent disc injury, like an intervertebral disc disease. I'll use a combination acupuncture and laser therapy. Whereas I seem to reserve the shockwave for more chronic conditions that I really want to break through those pain patterns, as well as acupuncture.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes total sense. Yeah. I mean, definitely for acute issues, I can see lasers be having a really big impact. I mean, I was lost on what lasers were doing for years until I saw it actually close up an actual open wound. I'm like, oh wow, there's something happening.
Right. Yeah. The wound healing is, I'll use it like on a lot of dogs that have like a chronic lick granuloma that they just won't leave alone. I'll use that on that as well. Shockwave works great on that too. But the wound healing is phenomenal. You can really increase the closure. So I know a lot of general practices use it after surgeries, like even after a space surgery, they'll use the laser and that's part of their treatment protocol just to get it to heal quicker and more thorough. And I've used it on, I have my own personal horses and I have a recent horrific injury that my horse had, but I've been using it on his injury and it's healing nicely. So it's a wonderful tool for a lot of things. Back pain, which I have a lot of that as I get older, put the laser on my back and I'm feeling better.
Love that. Sorry for kind of walking through all your different tools here, but I'm just so curious in this type of stuff and especially how you're kind of applying different therapies. And last one I'll land on is the actual PEMF therapy. Now, is it the loops, the one of the smaller loops, or is it more of a larger PEMF?
You know what I use? I do have the loop, but I also have a bed. It's a PEMF bed. So I will often, when I do my acupuncture therapy, I have the animal lay on that bed. And from the effects of, and I don't know if there's science or research projects behind this, but what it is the bed will help cause vasodilation so that those neurohormonal chemicals that you're releasing from your acupuncture circulate through the body. So you get a more systemic effect, or it enhances the systemic effect. I find the animals relax on it pretty significantly during their treatment sessions. So they get up and they're there for a few minutes and they start to relax and then they really get a nice relaxing benefit from the acupuncture and the PEMF. So I often combine those therapies. And then on an animal, so the loop I use a lot in an animal that's got, a local pain issue, either a knee or back, but it's also a really nice tool to send home with owners that, you know, want to avoid giving systemic NSAIDs for pain. They can use this a CC loop for focal treatment.
I've even used the actual PEMF for myself. Like, I have a mat that I lay on. It feels great. I mean, whether it's me dropping into this place where it's like, okay, this is where I go just to relax, or I've seen some of the science, I have a couple books on it, and It is interesting. It is interesting. I haven't fully wrapped my arms around what's happening, but it feels great in the moment.
Right.
So I'm okay
Right.
with that as well.
There's a lot of I'm a PubMed geek, so I always look up the research articles on PubMed regarding the PEMF, and they're using it for everything. Even in humans, they're using it to enhance cognition. So sometimes I'll even put the loop on my head that if I want to really tune in my brain cells.
There you
So yeah,
go.
it's used in a lot of amazing uses,
Oh, yeah.
relaxation and pain relief and all that. I like to put it over if I have another flare up for my back. It's another source that I can use for reducing pain in a lot of areas. So
I mean, honestly, it's really interesting to kind of see where all these different therapies are going. Like even shockwave, there's some interesting use cases with that.
right. Yeah,
I mean,
it's
if you
yeah,
got
just
if
pulling
you
up PubMed, you're like, I had no idea you could use it for that. It's
Oh yeah. It'll take you down a really interesting rabbit hole.
right. Absolutely. Very convoluted rabbit hole, but
That's right.
fun little trip.
Absolutely. I mean, well, you know what? This has been really fun talk. As we kind of wrap up, any advice for anybody that's looking at using different tools at their practice, maybe different places that maybe they ought to start their whole homework. PubMed is
Right.
one, but any other resources that maybe you want to give them to kind of sort through
I
which ones are
think
best for them?
I was apprehensive about going out on my own, like most, veterinarians are. But, I started small and I worked my way up, and the demand is there. People want to find, want alternative, safe ways to help their animals, and they want to feel like they're doing everything they can. So it's being able to provide that for them on whatever level. So, for veterinarians that are wanting to do this, taking it slow and building one step at a time. That's how I did it. There's multiple ways, but it's just one route. And just keep at it, and it'll come together.
I
I
love
didn't
that
think it
advice.
would, but it has, and the demand is there, and now I need to clone myself so I can keep up with demand.
That's coming down the line too. There's some interesting stuff on like PubMed
Hang on a few
about
years and you'll be
that.
there, right?
But that's all right. That's all right. Give us some time. I mean, but look, it's been great talking. Hopefully the power comes back on really quickly for you. And
Thank
if
you.
you could just let the audience know if they have questions or they want to find your actual practice, do you want to just plug your website or any type of social media pages that might be out there?
Yeah, so my website is www.pawpower.vet, VET, and that's also my email's info@pawpower.vet. And then I have an Instagram that is Palouse Vet. And
Palouse Vet.
Palouse is spelled PAWLOUSE. And it's kind of a play on the name of the area where I live in the Northwest. So I live in the Palouse foothills. And my original plan was to set up practice out at my little ranch. So I made a play off the name, but I ended up going into a more central location. So that's where that really odd name comes from.
I love it. I love it.
Named after the
We
region I live in.
Hey, you know what? Actually, that's a really good marketing play too, but we can talk about that later. But still,
Yeah.
it's been great And
talking
so
with
it's a
you.
wrap. Thank you so much as always, for tuning into the podcast. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that conversation with Dr. Soa. You can get more information about what she's doing at her practice in the show notes. You can her details there, so as far as her actual social media as well. And if you're in that Spokane Valley, Washington area, drop by. So with that being said, again, go rate the podcast, tell a friend about the podcast, and I look forward to doing more of these conversations about what's happening in the vet world in the future. Okay, until next time.